Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Built on the Border podcast. With you, as always, this is Tom Randolph. It is March 9th. This is our third episode of the show. And with me, as always, my good friend Tommy Watson. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing good.
Yeah? Had a good weekend?
I did have a good weekend.
It was a nice weekend. I had some nice weather. And I'm joined as well in the studio for a second consecutive week by my good friend Brody Johnson. Brody, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Really enjoying this spring weather that we're having now.
Yeah, it's great. Brody, if I understand correctly, you just came back from a nice little mini vacation. You went to, why don't you tell us about where you went?
Well, I went to a family friend's wedding out in the Outer Banks, North Carolina. Great to see the beach, but surprisingly, the weather here was about 40 degrees warmer.
Really?
Nice. Wow.
Well, we're glad to have you back here in Kansas City. We've got a lot to talk about this week. A lot's been going on this weekend. A lot's been going on today. And I think we'll dive right into kind of the biggest topic recently, which has been Chiefs free agency. Chiefs have been making some moves, spending some money, which is kind of surprising.
This was unexpected.
We have not seen the Chiefs kind of spend like this in an offseason in a while. They came to terms, well, have not yet, but we'll come to terms tomorrow with Jeremy Maclin on a four-year, $44 million contract, paying him $11 million per year. Got him back, rejoined with Andy Reid and the Chiefs. I love the signing, just for starters, just to start with Jeremy Maclin. I think it's great for the Chiefs. I think it's going to give us a downfield threat. What's your thoughts, Tommy?
I really like it. There should be no lag time with him adapting to our offense since he was raised in the Andy Reid offense. I also think this is definitely meaning that we're cutting Dwayne Bowe.
Yeah.
There's no reason to have them both on the team.
No, I don't think so.
And the salary is pretty much the same as what Dwayne Bowe was getting,
right,
except an increase in talent.
Exactly. Well, you know, as our listeners probably know, Dwayne Bowe is currently in, he's owed $14 million this year. If the Chiefs do cut him, they only save $5 million of that cap space. It has given us some flexibility, though, even more so, now that we find that Tom Bahali and Mike DeVito both have taken pay cuts. Brody, what are your thoughts on that? Tom Bahali taking a $3 million pay cut. DeVito, we don't know the exact terms of how much money he took. But thoughts on them taking less money to stick around with this organization?
I mean, it shows that they really do care about this organization, that their heart and soul is with the team. And if I remember correctly, the pay cuts that Taba Ali gets, some of the bonuses are with sack totals and performance.
Yeah, so it gives him incentive.
So incentive.
Yeah, it gives him incentive to perform on the field. And like you said, it shows that these guys are committed to the efforts that this organization is trying to put forward to put a winning product on the football field. And for the first time, I'll say this honestly, for the first time I'm really impressed with John Dorsey as our general manager.
I agree.
I think he had yet to show us what his kind of total plan was, and I think it's starting to kind of come to fruition. Another, you know, big move or big, you know, occurrence for the Chiefs this offseason, today Rodney Hudson signed a deal with the rival Oakland Raiders. Tommy, you have the terms of the deal, don't you?
Yes, Rodney Hudson signed for 5 years for $8.9 million a year. That's $44.5 million total, which is a record for NFL centers.
Yeah. You know, I think he was deserving of a new contract.
I think
the Chiefs did try their best to try and work something out, but in the end, the Raiders have a lot of money to throw around right now.
$70 million in cap space.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of criticism of their general manager, McKenzie, for being able to go out and get talented people, and they've offered contracts to big name free agents. They just don't want to sign with the Raiders.
Yeah.
So finally, the Raiders got somebody to take their money. With that kind of shift, you know, we've seen the Broncos. They were able to bring back Peyton Manning. They're bringing back Demaryius Thomas. We don't know what Julius Thomas's status is with the team. We've seen the moves the Chargers have made, which have not been many, and then we see the moves the Raiders have made. Where do you see the Chiefs kind of now falling in terms of the strength of their offseason and then going into next year in terms of the divisional, where the division stands?
Well, the Maclin signing was huge to me because I did not anticipate the Chiefs coming up with a good wide receiver before the draft, and they have done that. And so now I see them in high contention with the Broncos for the division next year with maybe an edge, just because I think Peyton Manning is starting to fade towards the end of his career, mm-hmm. and the status of Julius Thomas being unknown right now, a lot of factors up in
there. Yeah, and Brody, you had mentioned this when we were kind of talking before the show. You think that this gives the Chiefs an opportunity to go out and draft offensive linemen, which you said is a neat area of need for the team.
Well, especially with the news that Hudson, really coming into his prime, is leaving the Chiefs.
Yeah, and you have not been impressed with Fisher's production this far in his career.
No, every year there's one game that is really shows why he was a first-round pick, and then just mediocre performances.
Yeah. You know, Tommy, you and I talked about some of the solutions maybe there. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to shift him over to guard, let him develop a better understanding of NFL pass and run blocking schemes, and then if he earns that role of playing that left tackle's position, move him back out to tackle. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they should just move him to right tackle and draft another left tackle.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's going to depend on who's available in the draft, but he's so far shown that he's not worth the first overall pick.
Yeah. And then, you know, the last area of need that the Chiefs kind of need to shore up is the defensive backing core, that being the secondary and the linebackers. There's a guy who I'm really high on, and I would love to see the Chiefs draft. He's familiar because he's a local guy, played at the University of Kansas. Ben Heaney is projected to go somewhere within the third or fifth round, maybe even go higher because his athleticism that he's shown in the combine. I think it would be great if the Chiefs could draft someone like Heaney, bring in a local guy, some guys from some KU flavor. Then also the Chiefs are trying to re-sign Ron Parker, our safety. I think that secondary, you know, while they looked great last year, I think a lot of that had to do with the pressure that Halle and Houston were able to provide. I think it's going to be important to get more young guys that have with a proven track record of maybe one or two seasons to shore up that secondary. And then I think after that, I think the Chiefs are, like you said, they're in a really good position to compete with the Broncos for that divisional title.
Yeah. You know, I've also heard that the Chiefs are one of the top teams pursuing Darrell Revis at this point, which I think would be a pretty good signing. He'd be a good veteran corner, and that would also free up Ron Parker to play more safety because I think a lot of people agree that Ron Parker is a way better safety than he is a corner.
Yeah, it's a more natural position for him. I think, you know, he played really well at both positions last season, but his production was definitely stronger at the safety position. It puts your best players in the right positions there.
Yeah.
You know, Darrell Revis, you know, the report's been that the Chiefs are still pursuing him. They're not giving up. They probably have to pull off a cap space miracle to be able to sign him. But they're also contending with the Patriots and the Jets. But enough about the NFL. Let's move away from professional football and start talking about college football. Finally, we're talking about the SEC, which I know Brody's been chomping at the bit to talk about.
Always there.
Big news out of Mizzou today. Why don't you talk about that, Brody?
The Missouri Tigers did hire the new athletic director, Mac Rhodes, from Houston. He's really known for expansion and really fundraising a quality athletic department.
Yeah. So we kind of talked a little bit about this before the pod. Mizzou, from the move to the SEC, a certain amount of millions of dollars were allocated to expansion of their athletic facilities. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the football stadium recently had some work done.
That's right.
They're going to undergo an expansion. That's something that, as a Mizzou fan, you've got to be excited about.
Oh, it's great because it puts it not to the level, but at least brings it up to the level of all the other SEC nationally known stadiums.
Yeah. I mean, we've got friends that have visited a University of Arkansas, and they were just blown away with the facilities and everything. And somebody asked him, like, you know, how do you guys have these kind of facilities? And then the guy just said, SEC money, man. Oh, so it's not SEC money is now, you know, being brought in into Mizzou. So that's great.
Yeah.
The program. I'll talk a little. Mike Alden was with Mizzou for a long time.
That's right. He was with them for 17 years. And going all the way back to 1998, he was part of the hire of Gary Pinkel, who has really just made Missouri football, I think, the second most winning team behind Alabama.
Yeah. And you know, Alden brought a lot of good culture to that football program. Mm-hmm. He also oversaw the Ricky Clemens years, the Quinn Snyder years, the Mike Anderson years, which weren't bad. And then, of course, the hiring of Frank Haith,
yes,
who ended up having a few skeletons in his closet.
Yeah.
So, moving forward with Mizzou Athletics, obviously the football program has been really stable recently. Basketball program, not so much.
Not so much, but as the SEC tournament is about to begin, hopefully there's an outside chance that Missouri makes the tournament.
You're optimistic?
trying to be.
Who do they have?
Fat chance.
They're playing South Carolina on the first round, and then three more games, and they could have a bid to the NCAA tournament.
Who knows? They might beat, you know, the undefeated Wildcats to get a spot in the tournament. I don't think that's likely.
It'd make some national news.
Yeah. I don't think that's possible.
Now, one thing I did want to ask you, because I heard Bob Fesco talking about this on the radio today, is the length of the leash that Kim Anderson is going to have now at Mizzou, because there's a new athletic director. Kim Anderson is not necessarily his guy.
That's right, yeah.
You know, what's to say Mac Rhodes in a year says, well, you're not performing, this team's not getting any better, and fires him and hires the guy that everybody wanted them to hire at the time, the Commanders was hired, mm-hmm. Kelvin Sampson. How long or short do you think Kim Anderson's leash is right now?
I still think that it's like the 3-year leash that most new coaches have, just so we get some players, and it'll be interesting to see in the offseason all the freshmen and sophomores that he has that are playing, if they hit the weight room, if they really buy into his system, which I think they finally have. And take that leap, become at least a stable, not going into every game thinking, well, hopefully we don't lose by 10.
Yeah.
Having a pride with the team.
And I think, you know, I'm not trying to badmouth SEC basketball, but if you have a competent, competitive team, you can win a lot of games in the SEC. Exactly. It's not a bad basketball conference, but it's not a strong one either.
They're not technical. It's more athletes who are playing basketball.
Right.
Where you look at Duke in the ACC or Kansas, and it's true basketball players who know the game and everything. And so it makes for basketball maybe not to be as crisp and as clean, but just as competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, enough about SEC basketball. Let's get into the big tournament here in Kansas City this weekend, Big 12 basketball tournament. We're excited. We're hopefully all going to make it down there for maybe a game or two, hang out in Power and Light District, enjoy just the atmosphere that Big 12 tournament brings.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited, but with the way this KU team stands right now, I'm not optimistic about their chances to be Big 12 tournament champions this year. What are your thoughts, Tommy?
You know, I think there's a scenario they can win it, but when I was filling out my little tiny bracket for this, I have them facing West Virginia in the semifinals, and I have not liked the way that Kansas has played West Virginia this year. I think the only reason they won the other night was because they were in Lawrence, and KU traditionally doesn't even play well in Kansas City.
That's true.
So I'm going to give the edge to West Virginia in that one.
Now, see, I have a different opinion. I think the Jayhawks, if Perry Ellis is healthy, have a shot to win the Big 12 tournament championship.
Well, yeah, they have that.
But with Ellis not healthy, I know, of course, I think K-State will beat TCU in the first round in the opening game.
Yeah.
That means KU plays that winner, so they play K-State.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Ellis isn't healthy, K-State wins that game here, here in Kansas City.
That would shake craziness.
I think K-State views this year as a disappointment. They came into this season as a team projected to compete for a Big 12 title. And now they're not. And I think they're going to come out ready and hungry and try and earn an automatic bid in the NCAA tournament. So that's why I think that if Ellis isn't healthy, if Alexander isn't back from the potential NCAA violations, I don't see the Jayhawks having enough interior presence to win a very physical basketball tournament, which is what it's going to be this weekend. It's going to be a lot of bruising, a lot of beating up on each other down low. And right now, KU doesn't even really have the numbers or the depth to win these types of games. I think Hunter Mickelson has played great off the bench for KU when Ellis went down, and with Alexander being out, I think he's playing really well. I think Oubre is really stepping up again and showing that he can kind of be the alpha dog for this squad. But even then, I still think it's not enough. I don't think Frank Mason plays very good defense. I know Bill Self says that he's the best player that they have on the team right now. But if you watch him, Frank Mason has no interest in playing defense, which frustrates the hell out of me. And I just don't see this as a complete team yet. Without Ellis, they're not a complete team. And so I see them losing it in KU's first game. If Ellis isn't back, they don't stand a chance. My champion for this one, I think we differ a little bit. I have Iowa State beating Texas, then beating Oklahoma, and I think Iowa State's going to win this Big 12 tournament. Barring Perry Ellis getting healthy in the next couple days, I think this is Iowa State's tournament to lose. I can see other teams sneaking up, and I think you have a team you have picked to win.
Yeah, I picked Oklahoma, and actually, Iowa State is a little bit of a non-factor for me in this because I have them losing to Texas. I was reviewing their games earlier this season in Texas and Iowa State. Iowa State won both times, but they're fairly close games. And Iowa State, the way they play, they just live and die by the three-point ball. And I don't think they can do it again against Texas. I don't think they can sweep Texas.
That's fair. And I think your pick of Oklahoma winning the Big 12 tournament title is good because they have the best player in the Big 12 mm-hmm. in Buddy Hield, who, in fact, was named the Big 12 AP Big 12 Player of the Year this year. I thought maybe Perry had a chance to steal it from him, but after that performance he turned in against Kansas in Oklahoma on Saturday night with the game-winning tip-in, Buddy Hield, far and away, has been the best player in this conference this year. So he's a junior. Who knows? Maybe he sticks around another year. I know KU fans would like to see him leave and go to the NBA. But yeah, I think you know, that said, these are just predictions.
Yeah.
Anything can happen in the Big 12 tournament.
I love this tournament.
And I think anything is going to happen. I think K-State is a threat to go deep. Baylor is a threat to go deep. West Virginia is a threat to go deep. Every team that we have in that second round could potentially win the Big 12 tournament title.
Absolutely.
I think Texas Tech and TCU are kind of out of it.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't
think
Texas has a really strong chance just because I think that they have had such a rough year. It's kind of hard to rebound from that in postseason tournaments. I think Oklahoma State will struggle to find a rhythm in that game early against Oklahoma. But other than that, there's six teams that could win this tournament. So I'm excited. I know mm-hmm. we're going to be tuning in. I know we're going to be enjoying the games. And if you have never been to Kansas City for the Big 12 basketball tournament, if you've never been down to the Sprint Center for a game, try to make it there. Because I don't know if it's going to be in Kansas City much longer. I think that the end of the deal with the Big 12 tournament at the Sprint Center is ending in the next couple years. So if you're in Kansas City, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, get down to the Power and Light District and catch a game. All right, switching gears here again. We're going to talk about probably our favorite topic to talk about on the Built on the Board podcast. And that's Royals baseball.
Baseball.
The Royals have not lost yet in spring training.
Yeah.
It's been very good to the Royals thus far. We've got some new guys with the club that are really showing they can swing the bat. Alex Rios, 3 home runs so far in spring training. Kendrys Morales has shown he's been a pretty good fit at the DH spot. And Jason Vargas put in a pretty good outing today. It's hard to judge with these starting pitchers that they kind of have a short leash in spring training. But so far, most of our starters look strong. One in particular has not looked so strong. And who was that?
Yeah, I feel a little silly because I had him last week as my long shot, you know, hopeful to make the Royals Hall of Fame. Yordano Ventura has turned in the worst performance of the Royals staff so far with a one inning, 4 hits, 4 runs for a 36 ERA.
Well, you know, the nice thing is that's what spring training's for. You work out those kinks.
Yeah.
You figure out what mechanically is not working. The coaches get to watch, see what bad habits they might have picked up in the offseason. And you got to consider, this guy is in his
sophomore year.
He's entering his sophomore season in Major League Baseball. We got to give him a little bit of a leash. Now, hopefully, if we start seeing that kind of...
If it carries over into the regular season,
yeah,
then...
Hopefully that does not happen. Hope we don't see it carry over. But an interesting thing happened in the Royals game yesterday. There was a little bit of an issue with some bees.
Bees! Bees! Bees in the car! Bees everywhere! God, they're huge! They're ripping my flesh off!
Son, roll around! Jamie, roll around on the ground!
Forget that! I'm starting to swell up!
Save yourself! Don't be the hero!
Frank, I'm allergic to bees.
Me too.
They're huge and they're sting crazy.
We'll come back later and check on you.
Yeah, in a while.
Save yourself.
Your firearms are useless against them.
So for those of you that aren't familiar with the situation, and I can't imagine if you're a Royals fan you wouldn't be, but a large swarm of bees gathered around a field microphone that was right near kind of the home plate area, and they were just swarming.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the weirdest things I've ever heard of. They came from a wall in outfield and just like slowly, fairly quickly, I should say, moved across the field. The players didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it took the umpires a couple minutes where they had to wave the players off, and then fans had to back up too.
Right.
There were so many bees.
With people with allergies to bee stings and things like that, you have to be careful because, I mean, you don't want to be liable for something that might happen. Hopefully they have their EpiPens handy in case something does happen, in case the bees swarm again. But, you know, the most interesting thing for me was not the bee situation, because I'm sure there's been issues with, you know, bees in public places before. It's not the first time this has ever happened. But Royals manager Ned Yost had a little bit of an interesting take on the bees. He called it, and I'm quoting him, mass bee genocide. And he had
a travesty.
He was, well, I can understand why. He cited that there is a honeybee shortage. You know, there are less honeybees out there now, and they help with things like pollination, cross-pollination, and, you know, making delicious honey, of course. And he was kind of like, I don't know what the big deal is. They're honeybees. And he was saying he's from the country. He knows how to handle something like that. And his recommendation was that you smoke them out. You get some smoke going, and then he said you suck them up with a shop vac, and then just go let them out over somewhere else.
In the parking lot. You know, I think as soon as the animal control guy, the pest control guy got there, he should have just handed over the suit to Ned, and we should have let Ned handle it. He was the one who clearly knew the best way to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a country boy. We know Ned likes to go out and hunt deer, and there's no population issue with, well, there's a population issue with deer, and that there's too many of them. So we give Ned a pass for going out and hunting animals to control the population. But he, you know, being the kind of nature, environmental kind of guy that he is, he was a little perturbed about the bees. And, you know, I kind of say I have to agree with him. Honeybees, I like honey. I like have honey with tea and on toast and stuff like that. So, you know, I wanted to preserve those honeybees.
I got stung by a bee one time, so I have zero mercy for them.
Brody, you ever been stung by a bee?
I actually got stung on the tongue during a soccer game.
That would only happen to you.
It was some bad luck, but ended up getting a lot of ice cream. So I'm more than fine with bees.
Yeah, we know. Well, as we know, Brody loves ice cream, doesn't like bees. So, but, you know, this is making me even more excited. The Royals are on a hot streak now. We're in the national news for both baseball and bees. And
it's always good.
I think it's going to lead into a great season. I wish we were going to opening day in about a month. That would be fantastic. But I'm just excited to see what's going to happen this year. I'm really optimistic. And there's a chance that our bullpen might actually be stronger this season than it was last year.
Yeah, I see that happening. I think it'll actually play out well for us because I think that'll just turn into trade pieces when the trade deadline comes around.
Yeah, you know, we like a lot of these guys on this roster. We'd like to stick around. But guys like Hochaver, who knows? He might turn in a fantastic performance during the first half of the season. Other potential playoff team may see a value of having a guy like him as a middle relief guy or even as a starter. I think those are the type of decisions that Dayton Moore's going to have to make later on this year to really push us over the edge if we want to return to the postseason and make another run of that World Series. But I see the sky's the limit with this team. The bats are swinging the bats really well in spring training. Pitching staff has looked solid. And the team, like always, seems to be gelling really well. So I'm optimistic. I'm excited. And I'm definitely ready for the opening day to be here. Couldn't come sooner.
Yeah, April cannot get here soon enough.
No. So while we anxiously await the start of the baseball season, one of the other Kansas City sports kicked off their season the other night. Sporting KC, Brody, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
That's right. They started off along with all of the MLS last night against the New York Red Bulls here in Sporting Park to a sold-out crowd, just anxious fans waiting for the great sport of soccer. And the Sporting KC actually ended up scoring first off a cross from Field Harbor to Ikey Opara. But unfortunately, he gave up a goal just moments later. And also, another note of the game was Beasler got a red card.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I did see that. And, you know, I will say this. Brody, when he says soccer, great sport, is not saying that with any sliver of sarcasm. Brody actually loves soccer.
No.
And he's a passionate fan. And, you know, it does not surprise me that it was sold out last night. I love going to those sporting games. Now, obviously, you don't want a game that's tied 1-1 for the entire game. But it's still fun. You know, what that team has been able to do, you know, just from being when they were the Wizards to now being having that brand new facility out in Sporting Park. Not brand new, but relatively new facility out in Sporting Park. It's made me, who I'm not even really interested that much in soccer, really excited to watch them play.
Well, it's great that, I mean, the Chiefs and probably the Royals, too, are taking notes on fan interaction and getting fans involved because that's really how sporting came to be the third sport in Kansas City.
Yeah, and, you know, I think also having that national spotlight, we've got two guys that play on the national team, mm-hmm. Beasler and Zusi. I think having that also draws a really high profile. And you know what? I'm looking forward to going out and catching some games out at Sporting Park this spring and this summer. So, disappointed we couldn't pull out a win last night, but excited to watch some games mm-hmm. this year. So it should be a fun one. Always makes spring and summer a lot more fun here in KC. So we'll move on into our last segments of the show. We're going to get into our worst of the week category. And unfortunately, we have probably our worst of the week so far. Maybe probably will be the worst of the week, worst of the week in the year.
Yeah, and it's unanimous.
Yeah. I don't know how many people saw this. But it was in the news today, some members of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity actually it looked like most of the members of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity, on a bus, sang just the most
vulgar,
vile,
racist thing you could think of.
Bigoted nonsense I've ever heard in my entire life. And I was just appalled at listening to it. I was really happy to see the University of Oklahoma take swift action, the Sigma Alpha Epsilon National Fraternity take swift action on them. But I was just disgusted at this display of ignorance and hatred and just all around just... It just made me sick. There's no more words I can use to describe it. It would just made me sick. For those who don't know, these members of this fraternity were screaming racist chants on their bus going to what looked like to a fraternity-sanctioned event. I think it's bad today because there's been a lot in the news that has to deal with race. There's been a lot that has to do with hatred and words and the violence that people have against each other, show against each other, not only physically, but with their words as well. And it made me angry almost at work that I had to sit and watch these people just act so maliciously in the way they use their words.
You know, I was pretty shocked with it. You know, I think we all know that kind of racism still exists in our country as much as we've done a good job in the last couple decades of trying to weed it out. But to see that from a major fraternity at a major university, and for those... whoever led that chant to think that is an okay thing to do,
yeah,
regardless of whether or not he knew that they were being filmed, I can't see how you would think that's acceptable at all.
And the thing that terrifies me, the thing that disgusts me the most, is that that's not a new thing that they started doing. The thing that scares me is that's something they've probably been doing for years, for decades, for almost probably a century since that fraternity has been founded there at Oklahoma. I'm not saying that this is a byproduct of the Greek organization that they're a part of, but I do think it's probably a byproduct of the culture that was being cultivated there at that specific fraternity. And the other thing that makes me sick about it is because I am one to think, or you know, be hopefully optimistic of the fact that our generation is less racist and less hateful than the ones before. But then I see something like this, and it just shows me that there are still people out there that think that way and talk that way and have feelings like that. And it just, I don't know, I'm still really angry about it. I am happy to see that the members of that fraternity are being very swiftly dealt with and justice is being brought upon them. But honestly, I think I'd like to see a little bit more done. They've been kicked out of their on-campus fraternity house. They've been... Their national charge has been revoked. But honestly, I think that those students that are able to be identified in that video should face expulsion at the University of Oklahoma. I don't think anybody that thinks that way should be allowed to participate on a college campus.
So that's just how I feel about it. I don't think they should be allowed to participate as students at the University of Oklahoma anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I think the one redeeming quality out of this thing is, I mean, this story broke, what, yesterday, 2 days ago, and... the university's acted so fast with this, and the athletic department has unified and come together in this act of solidarity against this form of blatant racism.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it presents us and our generation with a challenge to go out and make sure that kind of ignorance and that, you know, kind of thought and thinking is kind of eradicated from our culture, or at least we nip it in the bud before it becomes widespread.
Yeah, they're setting an example that it'll never be tolerated, nor should it ever be tolerated ever again.
So enough about that awful story, because I think we could talk about that for days. But really looking forward to this weekend now, guys, with the weather and everything. We've got our Tournament of Champions trivia night on Wednesday. We're
participating at
Lou's Bar and Grill. We managed to squeak our way in, compete for some prize money, and maybe even the Tournament of Champions title on Wednesday night. So I'm excited about that. How about you guys?
I'm pretty excited about that, too. I think we got what it takes to... show our trivia knowledge.
Yeah, I think we'll have a good showing, but I think we're one player away from a championship. I think next year we kind of got to retool.
We need a scattering board, so
yeah, we'll see
if any of
the
audience out there would
like
to join us.
Yeah, we could use another player, so submit your entries to us at builtontheborder@gmail.com.
Preferably a girl.
Anyways, thank you for joining us this week for the Built on the Border podcast. We are happy that you join us as always. Tune in next week for another edition. We'll be doing it again, like I said, every single Monday. And we hope you guys have as much fun listening as we have taping this. So for Tommy Watson, Brody Johnson, I'm Tom Randolph. Have a wonderful week, guys, and we will see you next Monday. And I love you, dear.
just how